Imagine for a second, right, that you're spending millions, maybe even billions, on this state-of-the-art highway system.
Oh, yeah, like perfectly smooth asphalt, right?
Exactly. You've got brilliant LED signage, lane markings glowing in the dark. I mean, it is an absolute infrastructure marvel.
But there's a catch.
Yeah, there was one glaring problem. Nobody actually taught the drivers how to merge or, how to use the off-ramps.
That sounds like a nightmare.
It really is. You have this incredible system, but the actual daily practice of driving on it is just chaotic. It's fragmented. It's totally inefficient. And that is exactly the multi-billion dollar headache Singapore is facing right now with its job market.
That's a massive issue.
So in this deep dive, we are unpacking a really sweeping systemic attempt to basically kill the traditional resume. We're looking at a complete shift away from hiring based on the classic, reliance on what degree you hold or what your last job title was.
Right, moving toward a true skills-first ecosystem.
Exactly. So to really grasp the scale of what is happening here, we kind of have to establish the baseline of where Singapore currently stands, right?
Yeah, we do. And the country has already heavily invested in what's known as infrastructure readiness. Like, the roads are built, to use your analogy.
Right.
You have these substantial training subsidies available to citizens. There are comprehensive national skills frameworks that map out various industries. I mean, it's a massive continuing education and training landscape.
And this is the big, but the actual adoption of a skills-first approach by the people who matter most is lagging.
Exactly. The hiring managers, the small and medium-sized enterprises, the everyday individuals navigating their careers. For them, it remains incredibly uneven. It's highly nascent.
So the overarching mission, the goal of the strategy we are exploring today is how to move from that basic infrastructure readiness to what they call routinized practice.
Right. Making a skills-based approach the unremarkable everyday default of how the economy breathes.
Okay, let's unpack this, because my immediate reaction is a pretty heavy dose of skepticism.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean, Singapore is globally famous for its education and training infrastructure. If all of this continuing education and training is already in place, shouldn't that be enough to solve the problem?
You would think so, right?
Yeah, it feels like every time you open LinkedIn, everyone is constantly upskilling. They're taking a new module or, posting a new certificate. If the supply of training is so abundant, why isn't this translating into better jobs and smoother hiring?
Well,
It honestly feels like having a really expensive gym membership, but never actually lifting weights. Or like a worker going to night school to learn how to build electric vehicle batteries. But when they show up on Monday, their factory boss is still demanding they assemble combustion engines.
that is such a good way to put it. The worker upgraded, but the factory floor didn't.
Right. So what it gives.
What's fascinating here is that your analogy hits on the exact root of the failure. The problem isn't a lack of effort from the workforce.
No, people are trying.
And it's not a lack of available courses either. The fundamental block is what is identified as the coordination gap.
The coordination gap. Okay, what does that actually look like?
Right now, training sits almost entirely downstream of business change.
Downstream, meaning what exactly? In practice.
It means an enterprise might decide to pivot its strategy. Like maybe they want to adopt a new logistics software or transition to sustainable materials.
Sure.
But they don't simultaneously figure out what new human skills are required to actually execute that pivot.
Ah, I see.
Meanwhile, workers are out there taking courses and completing certificates in a total vacuum.
So when they return to the office.
Exactly. Those newly acquired skills aren't actually being deployed because the company hasn't redesigned the job to utilize that new capability.
Wow. So the business is basically saying we need to innovate, but they aren't looking at the talent they already have sitting right there in the building.
Bingo.
And the talent is saying, hey, I just spent 3 months learning a new data analytics tool, but the boss is just pointing at the old spreadsheet and telling them to get back to work.
Yeah, it's a huge disconnect, which means the training decisions are not consistently anchored to enterprise transformation priorities.
It becomes a system that is what, just participation-led?
Right, participation-led rather than outcome-oriented. People are doing the training just to do the training.
Which is waste time.
Time and public subsidies, yeah,
Yeah.
without actually moving the needle on productivity at all.
Okay, so if the fundamental block is that businesses don't know what to do with these newly trained workers, then we can't just keep throwing courses at employees.
No, we really can't.
You have to start with the employer's operational problems. But, and I really want to ground this in reality, we need to talk about small and medium-sized enterprises, SMEs.
Absolutely. They are crucial.
They make up the absolute backbone of the economy. If I'm running a local logistics firm with, say, 15 employees or a mid-sized retail chain, I do not have a dedicated HR analytics team.
You definitely don't have a chief learning officer.
Right. And frankly, if I read a phrase like job task skill taxonomy one more time, my eyes are going to glaze over.
Oh, totally understandable. It's very dense jargon.
A small business owner doesn't have the luxury or the budget to map out every single micro task their employees do and tie it to some universal skills matrix. How does this skills-first approach actually benefit an SME owner who just has an empty desk and needs a warm body to fill it by Tuesday?
That friction point is exactly why previous initiatives have stalled out. They feel like academic exercises designed for massive corporations, not local businesses.
Exactly.
So to overcome this, the focus has to shift entirely to what is called delta benefits.
Delta benefits. Okay, sounds technical, but I'm guessing it's practical.
Very practical. It really just means the immediate measurable return on investment a business gets for making the switch. For an SME, a skills-first approach severely reduces hiring risk.
Okay, how so?
Think about the traditional method. When you hire based on a generic job title, like operations manager, you are blindly guessing that their previous company defined that title the exact same way you do.
Oh, right. Because an operations manager at a tech startup does completely different things than one at a warehouse.
Exactly. You are basically paying for the ghost of a job title. But when you hire based on validated, demonstrated skills, you know the actual machinery of the work they can perform.
That makes a lot of sense.
Furthermore, it ends the incredibly costly cycle of paying for broad credentials when you only need specific capabilities, or delaying projects because you assume you need to hire externally, totally missing the fact that the required talent is already on your payroll.
But how do we actually bridge that gap for the SME owner? Telling them to hire for skills is great, but they still don't have the time to design the tests or the training to validate those skills.
And this brings us to collective action one. This requires a massive shift in how public training is designed. We must move training from being a generic syllabus designed in a vacuum to being directly outcome-oriented.
Outcome-oriented, so meaning what for the business?
Publicly supported training needs to embed applied learning, workplace projects, and real skills validation right into the curriculum. When that small business owner sends an employee to a course, they shouldn't just be getting a piece of paper in return.
The certificate doesn't help me optimize my inventory.
Exactly. They should be getting an employee who comes back having already solved a simulated version of the company's specific operational gap.
Okay, I need a tangible example of what this looks like when it actually works in the real world. Because outcome-oriented applied learning can still sound a bit abstract.
Sure.
How do we make training highly specific for a mom-and-pop shop without it costing a fortune?
Let's look at a concrete collaboration. There was a team up between Grab, NNG, and Polytechnic. They worked together to provide training specifically for SME merchants who operate on the Grab platform.
Okay, that's a perfect example.
Right. Now, a single tiny merchant running a food stall couldn't possibly walk into a Polytechnic and dictate a customized curriculum just for their three employees.
No, the economics of that just don't work at all.
But Grab possesses the data to see that thousands of these small merchants are all struggling with the exact same platform challenges. Things like optimizing inventory algorithms or managing digital customer acquisition.
Oh, I see. So by pooling that demand across many merchants, the training suddenly becomes economically viable to produce.
Exactly. The Polytechnic designs a highly targeted course based on shared real-world operational needs.
That makes total sense. The training is essentially acting as outsourced research and development for the small business.
Yes.
The merchant gets highly specific, instantly applicable skills for their workforce without having to design the training themselves.
And the employee returns to the stall not with abstract theory, but with the exact technical ability to optimize the digital storefront that very afternoon.
Right.
The training immediately pays for itself.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because we spent a lot of time on the companies here.
Right.
But a functioning ecosystem requires the workers, the actual human beings, to buy into this too.
Absolutely.
Let's shift this directly to your perspective as a listener. If you are sitting there right now looking for a promotion or maybe trying to pivot your career into a totally new industry, you might be thinking, look, I spent 4 years earning this degree.
I worked hard for this.
Yeah. I spent 5 years earning the title of senior regional manager. Just look at my credentials and hire me.
Right.
Why do you, the individual listener, need to care about translating all your hard-earned experience into a new skills-based narrative.
Because relying solely on a degree or a past job title is becoming one of the most dangerous gambles you can make with your career.
Really? That dangerous?
The harsh reality of the modern economy is that technical skills possess a rapidly shrinking half-life. The tools and platforms you learned 5 years ago are likely already obsolete or heavily automated.
Oh, for sure. Think about AI just in the last 2 years.
Exactly. Careers simply do not follow those linear, predictable, single-company ladders anymore. If you anchor your entire professional identity to a job title, and a technological shift systematically eliminates that role across your entire industry, you are in freefall.
Because you have nothing else to signal your value to the market.
Precisely.
So what is the immediate payoff for the individual then? If the business gets reduced hiring risk, what does the worker get for rewiring their resume?
Career resilience. That's the delta benefit for the individual. When you break your holistic experience down into its underlying component skills, you create portable skill signaling.
Portable signaling. I like that.
Your capabilities can suddenly travel across entirely different employers and completely different sectors. It dramatically lowers the personal risk when you want or need to make a cross-sector mobility move.
And I imagine it helps with salary, too.
It sustains your wage progression. Because you aren't forced to start from scratch at the bottom of a new ladder simply because you changed industries. You are moving laterally or diagonally based on what you can actually execute.
Adjacent skills. Let me make sure I'm mapping this correctly. Let's say I'm a hospitality manager, right?
Okay.
And the entire travel sector take a massive economic hit. If I only identify as a hotel manager, I'm just an unemployed hotel worker with nowhere to go.
Correct.
But if I break that down, I am actually a professional with validated skills in high-stakes crisis management, complex logistics, customer de-escalation, and high-volume staff scheduling.
Exactly.
Those specific validated skills map almost perfectly over to healthcare administration or large-scale event production or supply chain management.
That is the exact mechanism of portable signaling.
Yeah.
You become structurally adaptable. But, and this is a massive catch, for this adaptability to actually save your career, the system around you has to be capable of recognizing those adjacent skills.
Right. If the recruiter doesn't see it, it doesn't matter.
Which is why Collective Action 2 is so critical. It means we have to completely rewire the intermediaries. Think about the employment agencies, the career coaches, and the job placement center.
And the middlemen.
Yeah. Historically, their key performance indicators have been built almost entirely around speed and volume.
Wait, I have to push back here.
Go ahead.
If I run an employment agency, my profit margins are razor thin. I make money by placing people quickly. If I have to spend 3 weeks doing deep career coaching, perfectly matching a former hospitality worker's adjacent skills to a healthcare administration role instead of just shoving them into a retail job in 3 days,
you lose money.
I go out of business. How does the government or the policy ecosystem actually rewire that incentive without bankrupting the agencies? You can't just tell them to care more.
You are absolutely right. You cannot mandate altruism when it conflicts with a business model. You have to fundamentally change how the money flows.
Okay, how?
If an agency is only paid a flat fee for getting a butt in a seat as fast as possible, they will ignore adjacent skills entirely. The structural fix requires funding models and public subsidies to reward intermediaries for match quality.
Oh, so they get paid more for a better fit.
Exactly. For instance, the payout to the agency is heavily weighted toward long-term wage progression and retention.
I see.
If an agency places that hospitality worker into a healthcare role and that worker utilizes their validated skills, stays for a year, and sees a wage increase, the agency receives a substantial premium.
You have to make the financially lucrative choice for the intermediary aligned perfectly with the long-term career resilience of the individual.
That's the only way it works.
Okay, so if we manage to fix the training for the businesses so it's outcome-oriented, and we rewire the career coaches and recruiters to value long-term match quality, we eventually hit the ultimate collision point.
The company itself.
Yes. How do we force these two parallel tracks to finally intersect inside the actual company? Because it's one thing for a CEO to stand on a stage and declare, we are a skills-first company now.
We hear that all the time.
But if that company's internal applicant tracking system still automatically filters out any resume without a bachelor's degree, aren't we just setting people up to fail? We're telling workers to speak a language that the corporate machinery doesn't actually understand.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you have just identified the exact graveyard where most corporate transformation initiatives are buried. They remain entirely superficial.
Right. just good PR.
An executive reads a trend report, launches a pilot program in the HR department, but the core operating model of the business never shifts. To survive, a skills-first approach must explicitly integrate business strategy with people strategy.
That brings us to Collective Action 3.
Yes, it cannot be isolated.
Give me a real-world scenario of what that failure looks like and how it's supposed to be fixed.
Yeah.
Because we all know what happens when HR tries to push a boulder up a hill while the rest of the company completely ignores them.
Consider a mid-sized enterprise that decides to invest $1 million into a new suite of artificial intelligence tools to optimize their supply chain. That is their business strategy.
Sounds expensive.
Very. Typically, they buy the software, install it, and then act shocked when productivity actually drops.
Because nobody knows how to use it.
They failed because they didn't run a parallel people strategy. They didn't map out the specific data literacy and prompt engineering skills required to operate the new tools. Nor did they audit their current workforce to see who already possessed adjacent technical skills that could be quickly upgraded.
So to integrate the strategies.
The moment the capital expenditure is approved for the software, a coordinated plan must be executed to identify, train, and deploy the internal talent based on those required skills.
And it has to go deeper than just the initial deployment or the hiring decision. Because if I get hired or assigned to a project based on my cutting-edge skills, but then December rolls around and my annual review is based on an outdated rubric from 2015.
Oh, yeah.
Or worse, just based on how much face time I put in with the boss, I'm going to quit.
The entire internal machinery of career progression must be overhauled. Demonstrated capability must actively dictate project allocation, task assignments, promotion decisions, and ultimately compensation.
If I learn a new skill, I want to see it in my paycheck.
Exactly. If a worker acquires a new skill that directly drives business value, that must reflect in their paycheck and their title. The enterprise has to ensure that skills growth is intrinsically linked to upward mobility.
Right.
If a company requires a master's degree for a senior management promotion simply out of institutional habit, entirely disregarding a candidate who has successfully managed 3 major internal projects through validated leadership skills, the ecosystem breaks.
So how do they fix that internally?
Employers need shared templates and peer learning networks to safely redesign these legacy HR rubrics without feeling like they're jumping out of an airplane without a parachute.
Which brings up my absolute favorite skeptic's question.
Oh, here we go.
We've all lived through a decade of corporate buzzwords. We've seen synergy, we've seen agile, we've seen disruption. A CEO changes the company vernacular for 6 months, it gets put on some motivational posters, and then everyone quietly goes back to what they were doing before.
It's true.
How do we track this shift? We need to stop counting the metaphorical gym memberships and start measuring who is actually getting stronger. What are the actual receipts that prove a skills-first ecosystem is taking root permanently?
This raises an important question, and it's the core of Collective Action 4. If you can't measure the behavioral change, you are just running a very expensive marketing campaign.
Exactly.
Up until now, tracking across the broader economy has been incredibly weak. We might have data on how many individuals enrolled in a subsidized course, but we have almost zero visibility on whether that course changed anything on the ground.
Or how do we get visibility?
To prevent this from evaporating into corporate jargon, the system requires the development of collective outcome measures. We have to track actual behavioral adoption first.
What does tracking behavioral adoption look like in practice?
It means scanning the economy to see if employers are fundamentally rewriting their job postings. Are the descriptions dropping degree requirements in favor of specific validated skill sets?
Right.
Are employment intermediaries actually utilizing skills-based matching algorithms as their standard practice rather than keyword matching past job titles? Are individuals taking the initiative to build and maintain portable skills records on digital platforms?
But behavior is only half the battle. If I'm the hesitant SME owner we talked about earlier, I don't care if people are using new vocabulary on their resumes. I care about the bottom line. I care about money and productivity.
Which is why the final piece of the puzzle is tracking the real economic outcomes to create a credible feedback loop.
Okay.
The government or the coordinating bodies must collect longitudinal data on skills utilization rates. That means following up over years to ask, are the people who took the subsidized training actually using those specific skills in their daily tasks?
Are they actually building the batteries instead of the combustion engines?
Yes. We need to track adjacent mobility rates. Can we mathematically prove that a significant percentage of workers successfully transitioned to entirely different sectors without taking a devastating pay cut?
We need to see the proof.
We must look at the productivity gains tied to companies that have completed workforce redesigns and trace the wage trajectories of individuals who adopt this model across different life stages.
I see the mechanism now. If a central body can point to 5 years of hard data showing that companies hiring based on validated skills experience 20% lower turnover.
Or that workers who map adjacent skills recover from layoffs twice as fast.
Exactly. You don't have to convince people with theory anymore. You just hand the hesitant SME owner the data. The receipts prove the model is high payoff.
It moves the entire national conversation from mere advocacy to empirical verification. It proves that the system isn't just an ideal, it's a competitive advantage.
We have covered a mass amount of ground today on this deep dive. Let's pull it all together.
Sounds good.
What we are really talking about here in shifting Singapore from a credential-based past to a skills-first future is the ultimate coordination game. It is about making sure that the training you take, the job you apply for, and the strategy your company uses to compete in the market are all speaking the exact same language.
Perfectly said.
It's about taking the burden of translating skills off the shoulders of small businesses by making training immediately applicable to their operational problems. It is about rewiring the financial incentives of career coaches so they value your long-term progression over just placing you quickly.
Right, forcing business strategy and HR strategy into a tight, inescapable handshake.
And finally, it requires measuring the actual economic receipts so we know the transformation is real.
It is the difficult, necessary work of shifting from just having the infrastructure ready to making these behaviors the absolute, unremarkable, everyday routine of the economy.
And that brings it right back to you, the listener. I want you to mentally pull up your own resume right now. Think about how you are currently presenting yourself to the world.
Yeah, take a hard look at it.
Are you selling an obsolete job title? Are you relying on a credential from a decade ago to do all the heavy lifting for your career? Or are you actively marketing a dynamic, portable portfolio of demonstrable skills? Because the economy is actively changing the locks, and the old keys aren't going to work much longer.
It truly represents a fundamental shift in professional identity. Moving forward, you are defined by what you can actively do, not just the desk where you previously sat.
Which leaves us with a final thought to mull over. We talked earlier about how technical skills can expire in under 5 years. The ground is constantly shifting under our feet. So think back to our opening metaphor.
The highway.
Right. You do not want to be the driver stuck idling on the on-ramp, completely unable to merge into the new flow of the economy. If your current job title completely disappeared from the economy tomorrow, if an algorithm or a market shift just vanished your role overnight, what are the five underlying adjacent skills you possess right now that could act as your off-ramp?
That's a tough question.
What are the specific capabilities that could instantly pivot you into a totally different industry? It might be time to start taking inventory.